Welcome to the 38th edition of Dinosaur Science and the Bible with Dr. John Nape, retired religion professor from Summit College in Nebraska. Dr. John, I think we're talking about the fossil record today, are we not?
Yes, we are. And records are pretty much a thing of the past anymore, I know, so we might have a relational tie here between my generation and those that are listening that are younger as far as what a fossil record is. But anyway, yeah, we're going to talk about the fossil record. And the bottom line is one of the icons, if you will, relative to the philosophy of evolution is the fossil record. I mean, that is, again, a pillar with this philosophy of where life came from. And so as we begin here, something I want to share with you, Dave. I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, and I didn't forewarn you at all intentionally. But my question is, and I'm going to show this to Dave, and I'll share with you what I'm showing to Dave, those of you listening. And the question is, Dave, what do you think is missing from this right here? Now, as Dave's thinking about this, what Dave is looking at appears to be an 8. Just a large 8 I have here on a piece of paper. And the question, again, I asked Dave is, what does he think is missing from what he is seeing here? And we'll make that non-rhetorical, Dave. Not only that, but I know I'm putting you on the spot. And but what do you think is missing from this, what appears to be an 8 here?
John, I'm terrible at puzzles. I don't think I can figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I'll help you out here just a little bit. I've shown this over the years, and a lot of people will look at this, and they will say, well, it looks to me like what's missing is a couple eyes, you know, and we're missing a hat here. Anyway, the bottom line is the parts that are missing are the parts that would go with a snowman. I've had people have that view, and you look at that, and you say, what is missing? Well, so this is missing, and that's missing relative to being a snowman. I've had others look at this and say, well, that really is a cell that's dividing, meiosis, a cell dividing. And anything else you can come up with as far as what is missing from this, again, it appears to be an 8, and pretty much a symmetrical 8. Well, again, people guess all kinds of things as far as what is missing. Well, the bottom line is this. There's nothing missing. What you're looking at, Dave, and I'm looking at, this 8 is just exactly what I drew. I took my computer a long time ago, and I made a little circle here, I made a circle here. I put the two circles together, one on top of another, and I have this 8.
So it was a trick question.
Oh, well, yes, it was.
Thanks a lot, John.
Yes, you're
well.
I figure you're used to that from school. And hey, trick questions, any of us that are married know about trick questions, don't we? Yeah.
Should know coming from you.
Okay. Well, anyway, again, there's nothing missing. Now, what I did, I showed you something, a visual here, something physical, and the only thing you knew about this what appears to be an 8, was inferred by my question. My question, again, was, what do you think is missing? Now, by the question, I inferred, or the inference is, that there was something there that is not there now. Okay? And, of course, the bottom line is, there's nothing missing in this case. Now, let me explain this here just a little bit. Again, all physical objects fit in a story. We've talked about that in the past. Proverbs 18, verse 17, any story sounds true until someone tells the other side. Now, if we use the term missing links relative to the fossil record, the very use of that term, it carries with it inferences, like there was something there in the first place, because if there wasn't something there in the first place, how could it be missing? So we're assuming there was something there, okay? And we're assuming that whatever was there is not there now, and we're looking for it. How are we doing?
Gotcha.
Okay.
Right with you now.
Oh, yeah. There's your trick question. Yeah, absolutely. Now, for the creationist, the creationist relative to the fossil record is not looking for any kind of missing links. And the reason the creationist is not looking for missing links is because, according to the Genesis account, some 10 times God tells us in chapter 1 of Genesis that things reproduce according to their kind. Or in other words, lizards have baby lizards, birds have baby birds, and we're not looking for something missing, if you will, between a reptile and a bird. Now, evolution proposed for many years that birds evolved from reptiles. Over 60 to 80 million years, this transformation took place, lizards to birds. Now, the new story, of course, now is that many believe in the evolution camp that birds evolved from dinosaurs over 60 to 80 million years. Now, what should we find between a lizard and a bird? Or what should we find between a dinosaur and a bird? Should we find a missing link, or should we find millions upon millions of little fine changes as this reptile, this lizard, evolved into a bird? Or this small dinosaur form, trying to flee from predators, evolved into a bird? You know, well, again, for the creationist, we're not looking for any missing links because according to the Genesis record, there were no links there in the first place to be missing now. So I said all that to say this in a very roundabout way, of course. When it comes to the missing links of the fossil record, you know, the term missing links infers that they were there in the first place because, of course, they couldn't be missing unless they were. And if we're assuming that those transitional forms were there in the first place, we're assuming that the story or philosophy of evolution is true. We're assuming that they were there, this evolution, these transitional forms between a reptile and a bird or between a small dinosaur and a bird, and we just haven't found them. They're missing. We're looking for them. But it is assuming that the evolution story is true. Now, how are we doing with this foundational thing here?
Well, I just don't have enough.
Turning here.
I don't have enough faith to assume that, John. I don't know about you, but, you know, you're right. There would be, by necessity, there would necessitate millions and millions of missing links between one kind and another kind, and there is, millions of kinds? So there would be billions of missing links, and when none of those billions of links have come up?
Oh, you are.
Wow.
Okay.
How's that?
Hey, you're awake now.
Faith.
You're awake now.
Whoa,
okay, absolutely.
Man.
It does take a lot of faith. Matter of fact, Hebrews 11, verse 1, faith is the essence of things unseen, the substance of fossils hope for. And that's kind of where we're going this particular program. But again, the term missing links, again, is a term not from the creation camp because the creationist isn't looking for any missing links because those links were not there in the first place to be missing. It's a term relative to the evolution camp. Okay, looking for these fine gradations, these fine transitional forms between one kind and another kind. And as you brought out very, very well, we're not looking for a missing link. There should be literally billions of transitional forms between one kind and another kind. Again, the term belongs in the evolution camp. You know, with the evolution philosophy, we're talking about the evolution of non-living matter, inorganic substance, to man. And that's a long, drawn-out process beginning with non-living matter. And then somehow, miraculously, if you will, we have that single-celled life form, a protozoan. So we have protozoa, and then protozoa over millions and millions and millions of years evolving into metazoa, invertebrates, multi-celled with tissues and organs, but no bones. For example, a jellyfish would be a metazoan. Then again, you bring in the magic wand of millions and millions of years as metazoa evolved into vertebrate fish. Not only that, but fish that have bones, too. I've eaten very few fish without bones, by the way. But anyway, we have fish with bones, and boy, do I have a bone to pick on this one, okay? And then millions and millions of years, of course, the vertebrate fish evolved into amphibia. We're talking about frogs and salamanders, okay? And again, frogs that would eventually, of course, become handsome young princes. Now we bring in the magic wand. Wand of evolution, the god of time and chance, again, millions and millions of years, and some of the amphibia evolved into reptilia, into reptiles. And then the popular story again for many years of the reptiles over 60 to 80 million years evolved into birds. Now, the latest story, as I mentioned a little bit ago, now is that some small forms of dinosaurs evolved into birds, okay? So, and then we have the birds staying at that level of evolution, if you will, And some of those that crawl up on the land, the reptiles, evolved into mammals. You know, we're talking about cows and dogs and things like that. And some of those mammals, by the way, went back into the sea after being terrestrial. Not only that, but walking around on the land, they went back into the sea from whence they came, okay? We're talking about a whale, a sea cow, things like that, back into the sea. And then eventually in this evolution process, we come to a common ancestor for man and ape. And that mankind and ape descended from a common ancestor millions and millions of years, and little fine gradations, transitions took place. And eventually we have, again, the handsome young prince that came from the frog that wasn't kissed. Now, isn't that... That just kind of leaves you.
Sounds like a fairy tale, John.
It does to me. You listen to that, and I just want to say, wow. And matter of fact, I'll say it backward, wow. And I say it upside down, Mom. But anyway, the bottom line is you read through this, which generally speaking, it's not put out where we can see it. It's obfuscated or clouded with a lot of technical terms and jargon, difficult to sift through the smoke to see what the meat of what is really being said. But this is just this is basically what evolution proposes. Inorganic substance to a handsome young prince over millions and millions and millions of years of gradual changes from one kind into another kind. So in between, again, and I know we're kind of beating this to death this morning, but I want to be sure we have a handle on it. We're not looking for a missing link. Should, again, be millions upon millions upon millions of very fine little changes between one kind and another kind. Charles Darwin said it this way in his book On the Origin of Species. He said, quote, "As by this theory, that is the theory of evolution, as he was using it, and in particular, specifically relative to natural selection, survival of the fittest, okay, as by this theory, innumerable, countless transitional forms, we're talking about from one kind to another kind, must have existed." Okay, that's a very honest, straightforward statement. "Why do we not find them, that is, these transitional forms, embedded in the crust of the earth?" Well, why don't we? He continues, the quote continues, "Why is all nature not in confusion instead of being, as we see them, well-defined species?" Or in other words, if we're talking about, let's say, lizards evolving to birds over millions of years. Well, when we would dig into the fossil record, if in fact that is a fact, we should not even be able to differentiate, to tell clearly one kind from another kind. It would all be a blur. Everything, we'd have all these millions of little changes, and taxonomists, people that would divide up and classify genera and species and all that, you know, where would you draw the line? And that's what Darwin was saying back here, back in 1859. Again, he says, "Why is all nature not in confusion, that is, where we can't tell one kind from another kind, instead of being as we see them, that is, not in confusion, well-defined gradations between past and present species required by the theory?" And this is the most obvious of the many objections which may be argued against it. Against what? The theory of evolution, as Darwin was presenting it. "The explanation lies, however, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record." In other words, we just haven't dug them up yet. Right. Now, this is in 1859. Now, let's just back up here just for a moment before we go on again. So when we use the term missing links, okay, we're assuming that the links were there in the first place or they couldn't be missing, and we're also assuming that the evolution story is credible because on the creation side, the creationist is not looking for transitional forms, for missing links, because they were never there in the first place to be missing. Okay, so when we look at the two, and then we're going to apply the scientific method today and dig into the earth sciences, if you will, or dig into the earth itself, you know, what do we find in present-day science to support the creation viewpoint versus the evolution viewpoint? And the bottom line, of course, and this is where we're going, as you know, is that here we are a long time after 1859 and Darwin's book On the Origin of Species, and they still haven't been dug up yet.
What? No transitional links?
No, and I'm going to go through a few here. So that just might eventually give us the idea that maybe they weren't there in the first place to be missing. Now, before I lose track here, I just probably jumped in on you there, Dave, but before I lose track here, there's a new story now, and before we address what are proposed as transitional links or missing links that have been found, the new story is something called punctuated equilibrium. Now, punctuated equilibrium, as it was initiated by Dr. Goldschmidt, says basically, when it first came out, also known as the hopeful monster theory, by the way, that somewhere a lizard laid an egg, and out of the egg came a bird.
Bird.
Yeah.
Oh, how does that happen?
Isn't it? And then apparently another lizard laid an egg somewhere else. Out came a bird. One was a boy and one was a girl. It's a beautiful story. It's, I think, a little foul, personally. But they, you know, and of course, that's where the birdies came from. Now, as I say this, if you're listening this morning, it sounds really, really insane, ludicrous to you, perhaps. I certainly invite you to look into that. And I think you're going to find that that's the way that it did come out. Now, since then, it has been tweaked tremendously. And the basic view right now is punctuated equilibrium says that in certain parts of the Earth, when climatic conditions are just right, when the influx of gamma radiation because of solar activity is just right, conditions just right, you have this spate, this little burst of evolution process happening very, very quickly. Now, and this continues, if this is in fact true, this is why we do not find the transitional forms, the missing links, because they were not there in the first place to be missing, because evolution happens in short bursts of evolutionary processes very quickly, so we don't have the transitional forms that we thought would have been there under the argumentation that things evolved over millions and millions of years. How are we doing?
We're doing great. So this theory called punctuated equilibrium by Jay Gould, right?
Yes. Yes, very good.
He came up with that. And, you know, he came up with that because he had to try to explain why there was no fossil record that would back up Darwin's theory of evolution. So it's a theory to try to explain why there's no fossils out there that... we need to find, because Darwin himself said, hey, if we don't find these fossils, then my theory's no good.
Oh, yeah. He was very straightforward. And Darwin is often, I believe, statements he's made in his own book, his initial writing, misrepresented. You know, he made some statements that were very, very honest relative to the complexity of the human eye, relative to the fossil record. And of course, this is one that we just read. You know, he's very honestly stated, you know, that according to this theory, you know, innumerable fine gradations must have existed. Why do we not find them embedded in the earth? They haven't been dug up yet. And here we are a long time after 1859, and the bottom line is they still have not been dug up. Now we've come up with a new idea or a theory from a lack of evidence. You know, it's really,
right.
Yeah.
And John, you know, just to interject there, it's not, some people might out there might be thinking, oh, there's only a handful of fossils have been dug up. You know, there's still lots to go. You know, we just need to dig them up still. No, that's not the case. There's been millions upon millions of fossils dug up. There's over 7 million fossils in the British Natural Museum alone.
Yes. Yes.
There's so many millions of fossils have been dug up, but there's no record of this transitional forms. What's going on here?
Well, the bottom line, of course, is they weren't there in the first place. So since they were never there, it'd be very difficult to dig them up. Now, there are, as you know, some that are put forth as, you know, this is proof from the fossil record. Matter of fact, generally speaking, when you talk about the fossil record, for many people, the view is, hey, this is empirical. We can see this. We can touch it. This is proof that evolution is true. Well, when you would delve into what is put forth as a transitional form, and you take them one at a time, and you do a little research. You can do all this on the internet, and you do a little research on your own of the icons of the fossil record, if you will. I think you'll find when you get through that there is really nothing there to stand on. That the proposed icon or pillar of evolution, as far as the fossil record, crumbles. There's no foundation to it. For example, one of the very popular ones that I know I had when I was in school, and that's eons ago when you're scratching it there and into the stone tablet. Okay, and that was Nebraska Man, Harold Cook. He discovered Nebraska Man in 1922, of course, in Nebraska. And I just thought you'd appreciate that, Dave. And it was a single molar, single tooth, fossilized tooth, a molar. And it was the basis for the reconstruction of what was believed to be half man and half ape, named Nebraska Man. The Illustrated London News of that year, 1922, spread a picture, or a painting rather, of a hairy, stooped Mr. and Mrs. Nebraska Man. And to include their cave, the authentic environmental setting, if you will, there are museums of natural history in other countries that made representations of Nebraska Man, what he looked like, what the wife looked like, the kids looked like, how the cave was decorated, and that, all from a single tooth.
One tooth.
One single tooth. Okay, and it was presented as absolute, authentic, genuine, impeccable, an impeccable link between past and present species, and it, again, was all from a single tooth. Nebraska Man, as I know you know, Dave, was presented in the Scopes Monkey Trial of 1925 as impeccable evidence that evolution was, in fact, true. Again, a single tooth. And I think you know where this all ended up. Went back to where the paleontologist initially found that tooth. More excavation, found a jaw. And the bottom line is that tooth was a tooth of an extinct pig. And that was a case of a pig making a monkey out of an evolutionist, if you will. But, what does this tell us? Okay, you say, well, you can make mistakes anywhere, whether you're a theologian, a scientist, whatever, you can make errors. But, I mean, the thing is, it was embraced by the evolution community as impeccable evidence, again, used in one of the most famous trials in the history of this country, the Scopes Monkey Trial, if you will, of 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee, as absolute proof. And then it's tooth of a pig. Yeah, you know, this should tell us something.
You know, the evolutionists want so bad to find that evidence. And then when they find something that might be something, man, they create a whole community out of one tooth.
Yes, exactly. Jump all over. And
wow.
What often happens, and I found irritating over the years, is they'll come out with some kind of a new find in some area of evolution, as a proof of evolution. And then when it's rebutted, or when it's found to be a pseudo, or there's no substance to it, not only that, but it's wrong, you know, the retraction is not on the front page. It's not prime time news. If it's in the paper, it's on page 72B of a 13-page paper, you know, in 10-point font or a 10-point size type. Another one, Piltdown Man. This one was in my school book in San Francisco many years ago. Piltdown Man, reconstruction that was based on an ape's jaw and human skull fragments. And they'd been doctored intentionally to give an appearance of age. I mean, this is an intentional hoax. This hoax was exposed in the early 1900s as a fraud by Waterston, Bowl, Miller, Ramstrom, and others involved in paleontology. Yet it continued, and this is the thing that I just find mind-boggling, it continued as a central and classical proof for evolution in textbooks for almost 40 years after it was demonstrated to have been an intentional hoax.
Yes. That's so sad to see that, and this happens not just in Piltdown Man, and many, many of these fossil finds that have been hailed to be great links, you know, found to exonerate the theory of evolution. And they're still 50 years later or more, they're still in the textbooks.
Yes.
Though we know that's not right. That's not true.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. I've seen slides of some others who do creation science where here is the front page, if you will, in a scientific publication stating bottom line, this is a hoax. There's no substance to it here. And right over here is a picture taken from a textbook where it's still found today. Southwest Colorado Man, another one. We're talking about a single tooth, later found out to be the tooth of a horse. Neanderthal, you hear about Neanderthal, the Neanderthal Valley of Germany. The skeleton was found at the turn of the century, the last century. Okay, and although Neanderthal is posed often as an intermediary link, okay, one of the links, the brain capacity is larger than man's by almost 13%. He's been found in rock formations in which modern man has also been found in the same stratification. And if you were to take Neanderthal and you give him a haircut and give him an attaché case and a three-piece suit, put him on the streets of New York, and oh my, he would look like any of the other muggers. No, he looked like anyone else.
That's right. And John, in regards to Neanderthal man, there was at first, when they first found the Neanderthal, someone from the Neander Valley there, it was bent over.
Yes.
Hunched over, and they thought, oh man, we found the missing link.
That's it.
And this guy's just on his way up. But then when they did more tests, they realized that, no, this guy just had rickets.
Yes, osteoarthritis.
He just had arthritis.
Yes,
you know?
Okay,
that's why he was bent over. Oh man, no kidding. And you know, they do have a bigger brow ridge, but you know, the brow ridge is never stops growing. Mm-hmm. So all that indicates is that this person was very old. And we know from reading the Bible that before the flood, people lived to be average age of 912 years old.
Yeah, very, very, as we've talked about, yes.
And then after the flood, it would gradually went down, but mm-hmm. they were still living after the flood 400 or 500 years old.
Yes, yes.
Right after the flood.
Yes. And, you know, we talk about, we look at physical variety within the kind man. There is what would appear to be a lot of variety within the kind man, but genetically, it's minuscule. And, you know, what's the difference between a 4 foot, 9 inch huck on the island, in the Philippine Islands, and a 7 foot, 3 inch Watusi warrior? Well, one's taller than the other one, and one's shorter than the other one. And there may be some physical features that appear different due to climatic conditions and diet and marrying within that group. But the bottom line is they're still all people. And there's variety within the kind people, as there are is variety within the kind finch, the Galapagos yeah. Islands, okay? And, okay, I'm going to need to close this down here, Dave. We're running just blabbing away here on time. But anyway, we're going to pick this up for our next program,
also,
same area.
In regards to that Piltdown man that you mentioned, you know, John, that was, Piltdown refers to the gravel pit it was found in England. And there's been I think it was 500 doctoral dissertations done on that. And then they come to find out, oh, well, this was just a doctor thing. Somebody either played a hoax or tried to fabricate evidence for the theory of evolution. Here by putting together a jaw of an ape and the skull of a human mm-hmm. and putting through some acid treatments and filing down the teeth and trying to make it look like it was something that was real, real thing at that time. So, and the guy that found that, by the way, was knighted for his spine.
I did not know that. That is, yeah. I did not know that.
Queen got into the picture there.
Well, you are dead. Well, by the way, real quick, what does this tell us about doctoral dissertations? No one who reads doctoral dissertations. I read mine because I just to proofread and turn it in. People don't read doctoral.
All right. Okay, John, how do people get a hold of you and ask you questions?
You can contact me through my email, and that is jnay@creationscience.net. jnay@creationscience.net. I'd really like to hear from you. Agree or disagree, as iron sharpens iron, so one man another. Please contact me. Questions and comments. I would really, really like to hear from you. Also, I'd like to thank Prescott Valley Christian Church for their support of this program.
Okay, this has been the 38th edition of Dinosaur Science in the Bible with Dr. John Nay. Do contact him by email. Send him your questions, and he'll be sure to answer them here on future programs. See you back next time, next Sunday.